Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You are listening to Perplexity.
On October 4th, 1978, the body of a young female would be found along a rural road in Lyon County, Iowa. She was badly decomposed, partially clothed, and had been bound with rope. She was labeled a Jane Doe, and wouldn't be identified until 28 years later, in 2006. What happened to this woman and who was responsible remains a mystery to this day. This is the story of the unsolved murder of Wilma June Nissen. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kadra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. If you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. If you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you're a returning listener, hello my friends and welcome back. I'm very happy you're here. I have an important, cold, unsolved case to share with you guys today. I'm very honored to be telling this story. Later in the episode, you will hear an interview with a loved one of the victim. So this is a very important case to be sharing, and I'm ready to get into it with you all. I do want to issue a quick trigger warning. This podcast is not for children. Listener discretion is advised. All the sources used for today's episode will be available down in the show notes. I did just want to let everybody know very quickly, just one announcement. I've done a couple of collabs over the past few weeks, so if you have not listened to those, go check out my recent collab with Where the Weird Ones Are podcast with Kevin, and also my very recent collab with Like Mother, Like Murder. Without further ado, let's get into today's case about Wilma June Nissen. So going back nearly 50 years ago, it was the morning of Wednesday, October 4th, 1978. A telephone company employee was working in Lyon County, Iowa, laying cable. They were walking along a desolate road off Highway 182 near West Lyon School when this worker noticed something strange. As they got closer, they noticed what appeared to be a mannequin lying in a ditch. But gut instinct told this worker they needed to take a closer look. The worker soon made a gruesome discovery. This was no mannequin. This was a deceased woman. Police quickly arrived to the scene to investigate. She was about 20 feet from a gravel road, and tall, browning weeds had been concealing her remains. This victim was found face down and was in an advanced state of decomposition. She was wearing a silver ring with a gold indentation on her right finger. She wore white patent leather calf-length go-go boots, and she had a braided hemp rope bound around her ankles. Her light denim pants and bikini-style underwear had been pulled down and were hanging around the ankle on one of her legs. Her shirt was also missing. This victim had been beaten so severely that she only had two of her teeth left and her entire lower jaw was missing. Police theorized this victim had been dumped somewhere between July and August of that year after being dragged face down by a vehicle. Her arms were found coming forward along with her hands and hair, so this also made sense. It was like she had been dragged and then left in that position. No other evidence, like belongings or other teeth, were found at the scene. So in 1978, according to the autopsy report, the medical examiner found the Jane Doe's right elbow bone and one of her cervical vertebrae were dislocated. But police have released very little information, so we don't know the exact cause of death, And we also don't know if Jane Doe's injuries occurred during or after death. Police said this could point to a struggle. Police also believed her lower jaw was not missing because of animals. It seemed her jaw maybe was taken to conceal her identity. If she had been beaten up and bloodied, the perpetrators may not have noticed they left two teeth behind in the victim's mouth. As for initial thoughts with motive, it could have been some type of sex crime with her being found partially clothed, and it could have turned to violence and murder. Jane Doe was laid to rest and given an unnamed headstone. The case of the Jane Doe of Lyon County, Iowa, quickly went cold. There would be no movement in this case for nearly three decades. January 31st, 2006, this Jane Doe was finally identified as 23-year-old Wilma June Nissen, thanks to fingerprint analysis. A Des Moines laboratory technician was able to match Jane Doe's left thumbprint to a print card from the LA Police Department, and this gave them her name. She had been in the system due to having an arrest history for what was called at the time prostitution. But one of the big problems in this case was they had lost years of time. They weren't able to find and speak with family or friends of Wilma. Lyon County officials then offered a $10,000 reward for any information regarding the murder. A pink granite headstone was donated with Wilma's name, birth and death year, and the phrase, "Our girl." A memorial service was held for her June 3rd, 2006. Among the attendants were some of Wilma's former foster parents, Marshall and Maxine Holte, along with Craig Benson, a former sheriff that worked on the case. Blythe Blomendahl, the Lyon County sheriff at the time, would say, quote, "Wilma was a human being and deserves to be handled that way. Not just in life, but now in death. Wilma deserves an end to this, and I am going to give that to her." End quote. So around this same year, a forensic anthropologist would also analyze Wilma's remains. I would now like to go back and tell you all more about Wilma's upbringing, her tough life, and her whereabouts leading up to her murder. Wilma June Nissen had a difficult life from the very start. She was born in San Francisco to her parents, Charles and June Nissen, on October 19, 1954. Wilma was significantly abused and neglected by her parents. She and her sister Mona were abandoned by their mother at age 8. Mona also had significant disabilities. She was unable to hear and unable to speak. When their mother left, Wilma and Mona were left to be with their father, Charles. But Charles was very troubled, and he was not a good father. The girls were severely neglected and abused. They were often locked in a bedroom closet while Charles went to work. They didn't go to school, and the abuse continued to escalate when Charles lost his job. The family was living out of Charles's car for some time. Charles and Wilma would scour the streets for food, and Charles would often lock his daughter Mona in the trunk. So this is obviously very difficult to hear. And because of all of this, it shouldn't be surprising that Wilma had significant trauma and developmental delays. It wasn't until Wilma was 10 years old that she was removed from Charles Nissen's care. When California authorities found Wilma, she was unable to read, write, and she didn't even know how to use a fork. Wilma and Mona were both removed from Charles's home. But as for any legal charges Charles faced, that remains unclear. It doesn't seem like he was charged, though. Wilma and Mona were placed in foster care, and Wilma would stay in several foster homes over the years. One foster home was with Marshall and Maxine Holte in Anaheim, California, from 1964 to 1966. This couple described Wilma as being a happy and bubbly child who learned quickly. She stayed with the Holtes for 2 years, but kept in touch with them until she was about 22. The Holtes saw her a few times a year, but eventually lost touch, and she would go to several other foster homes when she was younger, until going to her last foster home in 1967. And this was with Vince and Alice Haas in Seal Beach, California. As a young adult, Wilma gained the nickname Boots for hitchhiking. She never stayed in one place for long. And as I mentioned earlier, Wilma had a very limited education. She had a history of significant abuse and neglect, and she had These feelings, I'm sure, of uncertainty and lack of safety. So therefore, Wilma was higher risk for going into a dangerous lifestyle. She resorted to sex work as a means of survival, and according to some, to try and feel the love that she was never given. Wilma also married several times and had a couple of kids, but they were all taken from her by local jurisdictions and placed into the foster care system. As far as Wilma's marriages go, her first marriage was with a man named Donald Eugene Wellington. They married August 5th, 1973, and they lived in Hollywood. There are some conflicting reports about the timelines of Wilma's marriages. Some sources say their marriage was short-lived, and Wilma soon entered into a new relationship with a man named Michael Pizarro Sr., and she gave birth to her first son, Michael Pizarro Jr., in San Diego, May 10th, 1974. But we do know she also later gave birth to Donald Wellington Jr., who was with the first husband, Donald Wellington. According to investigators, Wilma lived with Don Wellington until October 1975. Then around that time, Wilma moved on, and she met Robert Irvin of Long Beach, California. Wilma and Robert got married June 21, 1977, and were living and working at a shop located at the intersection of Bellflower and Artesia in Bellflower, California. Later in 1977, Wilma married Robert Irvin and gave birth to Crystal Joy Irvin at a Long Beach hospital on August 18, 1977. Crystal was also quickly put into the foster care system. After Crystal's birth, investigators believe Wilma went to San Diego and lived in a camper van. Wilma then met a 54-year-old man named Charles Inman Belt. In February 1978, Wilma left her home in Long Beach and went to the other side of the country with Charles. They went to Atlanta, Georgia, and lived with Charles's mother. Charles Belt is the last known person to have seen Wilma alive. He would later tell detectives Wilma left his mother's apartment just a few days after arriving there. He believed that Wilma had gone back to San Diego, but he couldn't confirm this. In addition to her married names of Wilma Wellington and Wilma Irvin, Wilma sometimes used aliases like Amy Irvin, Amy Belt, Wilma Belt, or Amy Nissen. After this, Wilma traveled to South Dakota and started working in Sioux Falls as a sex worker. She worked for an escort service that either went by the name Playgirls or Playmates. The company was known to service parties in the area, including in Lyon County, where her remains would later be found. When police identified the Jane Doe as Wilma June Nissen, they worked tirelessly, exhausting all leads. Chief Deputy Jerry Berkeley worked for the case for years, saying, quote, "We've been at a stalemate for a couple of years. We've exhausted all of our leads." But in 2016, police would receive a major tip. A black female who went by the stage name Sugar worked as a dancer for the same company as Wilma. She also was a known escort and sex worker and attended the same parties around the Sioux Falls area and in Lyon County during the summer of 1978. Police say they do know Sugar's real name and where she lives, but they have not released this information to the public. But we do have a picture of her from that time, which will be in the YouTube video and on the Instagram page. Investigators first approached people in Western Lyon County to talk about the parties that occurred there in summer 1978. But the people were very defensive and not willing to talk. Police explained they were just trying to get confirmation of who saw Wilma and Sugar together at one of these parties. Sugar was also interviewed many times by police, but never would admit to having any involvement in Wilma's murder. Sugar was a suspect, at least for a while. Some sources I read said police would later say they didn't necessarily believe Sugar carried out the murder, but that she may have witnessed it, and they do very much believe that she knows what happened to Wilma. However, Sugar does have a violent history that I need to point out. Sugar fled to Canada soon after Wilma's murder and stabbed someone in Canada, then fled back to the US. She was also known to rob other sex workers, so this could have been another motive to murder Wilma. Maybe Wilma had a lot of money that she had made at work one night, and someone wanted to take that from her. In a 2021 interview, Detective Berkeley was speaking of Sugar when he said, quote, "I don't know who I believe killed Wilma, but I know there are several people who know who killed Wilma, or that they were there and saw Wilma get killed. Now, whether she did it or not, I don't know. Whether she knows about it, I do believe she knows about it. End quote. Now, according to police, if Sugar was involved in Wilma's murder, it's unlikely she carried out this crime alone. The police have also been trying to identify another sex worker who went by the stage name Peaches. They also identified Peaches as another suspect. Peaches has been described as a light-skinned black female from Canada that worked in Sioux Falls and Yankton, South Dakota in the 70s and 80s. Now, unlike Sugar, Peaches' photo has never been released to the public. There was another unnamed suspect that failed polygraphs three separate times, but that was not enough, of course, to press charges. And also, as we know, polygraphs are not considered reliable science. I've also been told that Sugar took some polygraphs as well and did not pass those. John Van Gameren was arrested August 2009 and charged with 6 counts of perjury after lying to investigators about transporting sex workers to Sioux Falls to his home in Northwest Iowa. These charges were later dismissed. Van Gameren was never considered a suspect in Wilma's murder, but the reason I bring this up is because when police spoke to Van Gameren, the conversation did open up some other leads. Van Gameren was able to provide helpful information about other people that worked for this same escort company and people that were present at those parties. Police also considered a local serial killer and rapist as a suspect for some time. This piece of shit is named Robert Ben Rhodes, and he was known as the truck stop killer. He is confirmed to have tortured and murdered 2 couples in Illinois and Texas in 1989 and 1990. He's also suspected of torturing, raping, and killing at least 50 more women between 1975 and 1990. So he was active at the time that Wilma June Nissen was murdered. The suspicion that Rhodes has as many as 50 more victims is based on his trucking routes and how they lined up with women that vanished during those years. And also because these victims met his profile of a preferred victim. Additionally, a torture chamber was found in the back of Rhodes' truck, complete with handcuffs on the ceiling. So when Rhodes was caught in 1990, he claimed he had been active in killing for 15 years, meaning that he was actively killing people when Wilma June Nissen was murdered, and he had been living in Sioux Falls in 1978. Police interviewed him while he was in prison in Illinois. According to some, police were able to more or less rule him out because he allegedly hadn't committed murders until after that time, which he referred to as stealing hubcaps. But then other sources, including Rhodes, and as I mentioned earlier, they say that he started killing right around 1975, which was 3 years before Wilma's murder. But we'll discuss more on Rhodes later in this episode. That seems like police were able to rule him out. I want to talk about DNA for a little bit. In 2007, Wilma was exhumed in the hopes of extracting new DNA evidence. Unfortunately, time and water that was in her coffin washed a lot of evidence away, but police did later hire a Scandinavian-based company that was able to look at the evidence in Wilma's case and get amplified DNA. Now, the FBI's criminal databases, or CODIS, does not currently support amplified DNA. So they have this evidence that could potentially be used to find Wilma's killer or killers, but they can't test it right now. They continue to hold on to it, hoping that one day this will lead to long-awaited answers. Police did confirm there was more than one person's DNA found in the evidence. Regarding other leads, police did receive a letter in 2006 from someone who claimed to have seen Wilma alive, August 26, 1978, which would be about 2 months before her body was discovered. And remember, authorities suspect she was killed around August, but this letter was anonymous and had no return address. So police would bring this up in a press conference saying, quote, "I appreciate the fact that you are sending information in and you feel like you've done your duty, but it needs to go a step further. I have to have contact with you. I need you to do the right thing and call me. I will keep your identity concealed. If you actually saw this body, I have to talk to you. It is a piece of the investigation we cannot go on without." End quote. So police would continue to search desperately for answers year after year. But it turns out they weren't the only ones searching. Chrissy Atkisson was placed in foster care as an infant. She grew up not knowing who her biological parents were. When she got older, she was desperate to find out who her real parents were. She learned her birth name was Crystal Joy Irvin. And with the help of a friend, Starla Patterson, she was able to track down her biological father, Robert Irvin. Chrissy and Robert had breakfast at a Denny's and caught up. While the reunion was surreal and special for Chrissy, her father unfortunately didn't have much information about her mother. But she would soon learn her name was Wilma June Nissen. Chrissy and Starla continued their search to track down Wilma, and eventually, Starla stumbled across some newspaper articles. One of the articles talked about a murdered Wilma June Nissen from Iowa in 1978. And when Chrissy would hear this news, she was in disbelief. This answered questions like why her mother had never tried to find her, but it also raised so many more disturbing questions. What kind of life did her mother lead, and why would someone want to kill her? Why was her case never solved? Wilma had lived a very difficult and tragic life. She had endured years of abuse and neglect. She had limited life skills. She was a sex worker. She knew Chrissy would be safe with the foster family, and in fact, it was the same foster family that Wilma had been raised by for some time, Vince and Alice Haas. I'm honored to have spoken with Wilma June Nissen's daughter, Chrissy, for this episode. Chrissy is determined to get her mother's case solved. She emailed me with photos, important articles, and was more than willing to chat, and I'm very grateful for that. In Chrissy's email, one particular line that struck me was, quote, "She got more care after her murder than she got in her entire short life. The sheriff's department thinks her case won't be solved, but I refuse to give up." End quote.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, everyone. I'm very honored today to be joined by Chrissy, the daughter of Wilma June Nissen. And I am very excited to speak with you, Chrissy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
I was very gripped by your mother's case. And like I was telling you earlier, I can see how you're such a great advocate for her and you're really determined to get this solved. You know, we only see and hear what we get on the internet. I understand you weren't able to know your mother in life for more than a year. Have you been told by anyone what she was like?
No. She left. Okay. From what I was told that I was adopted and it was pre-planned. But I found out just a couple of years ago, I found some paperwork from a social worker that was addressed to me that she'd given to my adopted parents saying that they'd fostered me, but they couldn't find my mom. So my adoptive parents, my foster parents adopted me, and they were also her last foster family, but they would not tell me anything about her. What I know I've gathered over the last, since they identified her, most of what I know.
Yeah. Okay. So you really weren't able to know much about her until way later when you've got that newspaper article.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I was going through a really rough patch at that time, too. I have a lot of similarities to Wilma. Her and I made a lot of bad choices in our youth. I just survived it. But it was, I always figured that she'd gone off at like, she didn't, I didn't know that I have two half brothers. They're older than me somewhere from her side. I thought she had just, I thought I was the only kid. And I'd been raised to believe this whole thing that wasn't true. A lot of it was lies or half truths. And so I thought she just was not ready for a kid and bailed, and that she'd be fine and started a new life and probably had a family. And I would call names in the phone book before there was internet. I would call people with her name and ask if they'd had a daughter in 77. And I had, now mind you, this is the 90s. I had talk shows looking for her. Mm. Once the internet came about, I went on forums. I searched her name. In 2006 is when she was identified. And I found out through a friend of mine's mom came pounding on my door. Asked me what my biological mom's name was. I told her, and she immediately started freaking out and showed me the paper. And it was the facial reconstruction. I'm grateful for the person that did it. They'd never done one. I think it's the only one they did, and it had to be a rough one because of the condition her body was in. But they make facial reconstructions look off a little bit to get people's attention, so that they remember it. And if they see someone that looks like that, only not creepy, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Those can be a little jarring to look at.
Yeah. It was definitely, I couldn't look at it. I couldn't, my husband was my boyfriend at the time. Him and I had only been together for a few weeks, and I had to have him look at articles first to tell him, to give me a heads up if that picture was in it.
Wow. So what was the investigation process like for you after you found this out? Or did you like take some time? Like, you know, what was that timeline like? Did you get to work right away, or were you processing?
I mean, I'd been searching for her off and on my whole life. I found out her name by being a snoopy. I think I was a preteen. I think I was like 11, maybe 12, snooping through a desk that had a bunch of old paperwork in it. And I found my original birth certificate with my original name and my parents' names. And my adoptive parents immediately took it away. I found a photo, two photos of Wilma. Again, those got taken away. So I'd been searching my whole life. So when I found that out, I believe there was a phone number attached to the article. It's been a minute, and it was kind of traumatic, so I don't remember some of the finer details, but I know that there was my friend's mom, my now husband, and myself were there, and we contacted the Lyon County Sheriff's Department and let them know, hey, that's my mom. So they had me go and take a DNA test to make sure, and it was. Like I said, I was going through a rough point in my life at that time. I was battling getting off of, I had a drug addiction for a lot of years, and I was in the process of quitting. I've been clean for 20 years now.
It's amazing.
Thank you. It was time. It was definitely past time, but I had a whole bunch of stuff going on, and I didn't have a car, so I couldn't make it out there, but I stayed in touch. Law enforcement at that time were amazing. They cared about her. They cared more about her, this random stranger's body they found in a ditch. They cared more about her, this Jane Doe, than anyone had cared about her in her entire life.
Which is not how it should have been.
No.
Her story was so heartbreaking to read. It was just like time and time again, the system, the people around her who were supposed to nurture her and love her, failed her.
Yeah. Her first foster family, I mean, she'd been homeless before she was 10 years old. But her first foster family were amazing. I've actually met them, the Holdies. They are such amazing people, and they really loved her. But the foster mother developed rheumatoid arthritis and couldn't foster kids. They had Wilma and two other foster kids. And they stay in touch with the two others. They really love these kids. And I wish she could have stayed with them. I wouldn't be here, but she might be alive.
I was curious as well about Mona. Do you, because I couldn't find a whole lot about her. Do you know if Wilma and Mona were separated when they were pulled out of Charles's care?
They were separated. They went to different foster care because of Mona's special needs. Plus, neither of them had ever been to school. They couldn't read. I mean, at 10 years old, I know Wilma couldn't read, right? She couldn't eat with a fork. I mean, toddler stuff.
Right.
It was horrible. But yeah, Mona went to a separate foster home. However, they were in contact. I came across some pictures of them together. I mean, you can find them on the internet. There's a few pictures of them together. So it's not like they were completely out of touch. As far as I know, she is living in a group home in the area that in Orange County, Orange or LA County. No one told her because it'd been, you know, 27 years that she hadn't heard from her sister, and why upset her.
Which is fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Regarding Wilma's father, Charles Nissen, I also couldn't find anything if he was ever charged for abuse.
I don't believe he was charged with anything. I think they just took the girls. He lived a long time after that.
Really?
I know he was alive in the 80s. I think he didn't die until like within the last decade. Maybe longer. I don't know. And then he, when they were in his care, which was anything but, they were locked in a closet when he went to work. When he got fired, they lost where they lived. And so they all lived in a car. I have no idea where he was during the day, but I was told by a few people, including her foster family, her first foster family, and I believe them the most because they knew her right after, that Mona, the special needs sister, was locked in the trunk. And Wilma, at 10 years old, maybe 9, I don't know, was off foraging for food.
Mm.
That's no way for a child to. It's her upbringing's horrific. It's like a horror movie.
It's also just scary to think, like, how long they were in the streets. And I mean, people would have seen them walking around, I would imagine, you know.
Well, they would have at least seen Wilma.
Right. Yeah. So it's sad to think about, like, somebody seeing her and not doing anything. It took 10 years.
Well, apparently somebody finally did.
Right. Do you know what happens to Wilma's mom? I know she left.
I know she was married, I think, a total of 7 times. And she lived a long time, too. She well outlived everybody. Outlived Wilma, and it seems like anybody that could provide any insight into the case, it seems like they died a year before they were discovered.
And I know, obviously, your mother's case is a cold case now. Do you know if it's still considered open?
According to the occasional correspondence I can get from the sheriff's department, it's an ongoing investigation. It is a cold case, but it's still open.
Okay.
Also told that, because they have a new sheriff that just started in January, and I understand he's not up to date on all of it, but I was told that when he gets a chance to look into it, that it's going to take him a year, at least a year, to get caught up on the files.
The reason I ask is I was following your Reddit page and going through a lot of those forums. I know you've been trying to exhaust any possible leads, and you were looking to get the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, and trying to get more information. And so I had talked to a couple of people, and from what I was told, they were saying that if the case is open, it's very difficult to get that information.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I kind of just was like, never mind on the freedom of information. I mean, her cause of death has been unreleased because it was so horrifically brutal.
Mm.
And it makes my mind just go to the darkest places. And I want answers. There is no such thing as closure. Closure is an illusion.
Mm.
But I want answers. And I mean, justice is kind of an illusion too, because these people have walked free. If they're even still alive, they're old and they've lived their lives. And they took away the life of a woman who was barely a woman, who'd never even gotten to be a child. In a horrific manner.
Not to speculate, but I really value your opinions and your thoughts. Is there anything that you strongly believe about what happened to your mother?
Honestly, I don't know. I've heard so many theories. Like, I talked to a person that lives in Rock Rapids, and they remember they were about 10 when Wilma was discovered. They called me and we had a very interesting conversation, and there were a lot of things that they had just recently put together with all my posts they'd seen. They called Miss Stoner from the, I can't remember, detective or deputy, the main police person. They called her and they felt like she just kind of blew them off. Mm. I don't know if that's because they'd already looked into it or they just are like, eh. Because the only response I can ask them questions, and the only response I get is, it's an ongoing investigation. We can't discuss the case. So I also have, if anyone knew her, I don't care how they knew her, if they were friends, if they were a client, because she was a sex worker. I mean, she aged out of the system and she had no support. I'm not the only one that believes this, but her first husband, we believe, started pimping her. Mm. So she was a sex worker, which turned out to actually be good. There was one good thing about it, because that's how they identified her, was through a fingerprint arrest.
Right.
But I would love to talk to anyone that knew her. So if they would contact me that way. Also, I know you're not supposed to do this, but I have an email specifically for any information for Wilma, whether it be something that seems trivial and insignificant, but you saw her, or you saw her with Peaches and Sugar, the two suspects, or you knew her, please contact me, because I want to know more about my mom.
Absolutely. I was curious about, because I was, you know, going into all the different theories. Do you have any thoughts on Robert Ben Rhodes, the truck stop killer? I found it kind of confusing because police said they like more or less ruled him out because they said that he wasn't killing during that time. But then I found other sources that say he was killing during that time. And like he said he was killing during that time. So,
well, the reason they were able to do so much wasn't just because they cared, because, again, small town, they don't have a lot of money for it. They identified her in 2006. They exhumed her in 2007. They have yet to rebury her.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
But the reason that they were able to do those things were because they had some federal funding to make sure and see if she was one of his victims. So they did a lot of digging into that, and they truly believe, they don't know if Peaches and Sugar did it, but they know that they know who did it, and they had a history of robbing people and being violent, although no murders. I mean, they've polygraphed, and I know a polygraph isn't solid court admissible, but they know where Sugar is. They know her real name, and she's failed multiple polygraph tests. So they just need someone to come forward if they saw Sugar with Peaches, if they saw Wilma with them. The person I talked to from Rock Rapids that remembered the case had a whole bunch of weird coincidences. The one that the detective kind of blew off. And I would go, and it's just a theory, and I don't want to make it a conspiracy theory.
Of course.
But I do. I am going to look into it. And I am going up to Rock Rapids in springtime. I'm going to be in Nebraska for 3 weeks, and it's a lot closer to, it's like a 3-hour drive from Nebraska, as opposed to a, you know, 5.5-hour drive from where I live. So I'm just going to go up, introduce myself to the new sheriff.
That's great.
See if that does any good. As I mean, we want the same outcome. We want the salt.
Right.
And I mean, they do have like, they have, I don't know if you saw the Angela Konecki a few years back, did a story. It was a quick, she was doing cold cases, and she did a quick one for Wilma. We went to the sheriff's department in Rock Rapids, and I was told that they had amplified DNA from a company in Sweden, but it couldn't be used in CODIS. I don't know how DNA and CODIS work, but that was 2001. In the last 4 years, there have been so many advancements in DNA technology, so many. And I really feel like between companies like Ortham, and there's others like it, that's just the only one I know off the top of my head, I really feel that they could solve her case. Because they have that, or amplified DNA.
Yes.
And with that, and then genetic genealogy and SNP DNA. And I'm not a very sciencey school person. I've looked into this and I'm like, I know this could work. I will sell a kidney. I don't care. I will do anything I can to raise the funds if I have to make it happen. But the problem is law enforcement usually has to contact them, and I can't even get law enforcement barely to contact me. Mm. I don't know if it's because they don't care or because I never met her, but she was still my mother. And similarities in our, you know, 20s are insane.
Have you been able to contact any of your other half siblings, or do you know anything about them?
I met one on my father's side. He's in prison.
Okay.
So and he's in prison for something I really don't want to have contact with him for.
Okay.
I have two younger siblings on my dad's side, but they were taken by the court system. So no idea what their names are, how old they are. There's a search angel on Facebook that's been trying to help me find family members. No luck at all with Michael Pizarro. He thinks he might have found him, but he also thinks that he might have died 2 years ago. And that would have been the middle child of Wilma, I believe. Or no, I think that would have been our first one. And then, oh God, what was his name? Is it Wellington?
Yeah, Donald.
Yes, thank you. She had a Donald Wellington Jr. And there's not hide nor hair of him. But I know they were both taken into the system as infants, and that usually a name change happens. I know my name was changed, so trying to find them is very difficult. I've had a lot of people tell me I should take a DNA test, like do an ancestry, but those are also very expensive. So
sure. Yeah. Well, if you ever do a fundraiser or anything like that, I would love to donate. And I know like our podcasting support groups, we're all very like victim first podcasts, and we like doing stuff like that. And obviously it's very important. So I don't think that would be a problem, us being able to help with that. And we would love to do that. So
thank you so much. I wouldn't even know how to start a fundraiser.
You just make a GoFundMe.
GoFundMe's are so, they take so much of the money that people donate. It kind of makes me mad. I'm like,
oh, really? Maybe there's an ethical one that we could find. Because I mean, I really believe that, kind of like what you were saying earlier, I feel like the greatest chance of this being solved at this point is going to go back to DNA. And there's so many cold and unsolved cases that are solved through ancestry and things like that these days. So I mean, I would love to help with that. And even if it brings up nothing, I don't think it's a waste of time, because it would still give us some answers of like, well, that gets crossed off the list, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Yeah, I know with the amplified DNA that they were able to rule out, like, the law enforcement people that had, it was from the rope that dragged her body. And they were able to rule people out, but that's all they would tell me. They can't and won't tell me a lot of things. And I understand, but it's still so frustrating.
See, I was going to say that still has to be so frustrating. I can't imagine.
That between that and knowing that the cause of death was so brutal. Yeah. Like they make it sound like it was like horror movie. Awful. I need answers, because it's killing me.
Of course. Is there anything else that you want to like urge listeners for, or like any other message you want to convey about your mother?
She wasn't perfect. She was a sex worker, but with the life she lived, she really didn't have many options. I think that she did things because she'd never had stability. She'd never had a loving home. She never had loving parents, but she was a person. Her life was taken from her before she barely got to be an adult in a horrific manner. Her whole life was a living hell. So please, if you know anything, tell someone. If you don't want to tell the police, tell me, tell the Cold Case Coalition, email, contact me on Reddit. I have the r/Wilma June Nissen. There's also a Facebook page, and it's help me solve my biological mother's cold case, or you can just you can email me at justice4wilma@aol.com, and I will not share any information if you don't want me to. If you just want, you got something that may be a theory, you might think it's crazy, just tell me anyway. But you can contact me if you want just to direct email. It's justice4wilma. So justice4wilma@aol.com.
Chrissy, thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry I get sidetracked and ramble.
No, you were great. And I mean, I always like to emphasize too, like with what you were saying about Wilma, there's no such thing as a perfect person. There's no such thing as a perfect victim. And that in no way means that we should pay less attention or give less love to someone.
Everyone's a life, and everyone is their loved one to someone. She never knew me. She was murdered right around my first birthday. So, but I still somehow feel like a piece of me is missing with the horrific life she lived. Poor girl. I mean, someone needs to fight for her. And
right.
I didn't even know I was advocating. I had someone tell me I was a good advocate for her. And I'm like, what advocate?
Yes, like, you are. You're a good advocate. And I mean, everybody needs an advocate in these situations. And oftentimes law enforcement can't remain an advocate or isn't an advocate, whether it be because they don't have the resources and time with like staffing, or whether it be because they run out of leads. But, you know, I think it's so important to just to not stop fighting. And like you said, the more people talk about this case, the better. So just remember, everyone, like your voices are not insignificant in this. So even if you don't know anything, just share the story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Please share her story. I don't care if it's telling a neighbor. I don't care if you put it a billboard. I don't care if you tell, please don't take this personally, but tell your favorite podcast or YouTube. No,
absolutely.
Or news station or talk radio. Mm-hmm. Or anything. I just tell people, because someone saw something or knows something, and they may not even know they know it. It could be something so seemingly crazy or something so insignificant that'll solve this. I don't expect closure, because that's just not how this works, but I do want answers, and I want her to be able to be laid to rest. I want them to be able to take her body that has been in storage since 2007 and lay it to rest with answers.
Yes. Thank you again, Chrissy.
Thank you.
As listeners and viewers, we have the power to share this story and get more eyes and ears on it. So I urge you to share Wilma June Nissen's case. And if anyone has any information on what happens to Wilma June Nissen, I'm putting a lot of sources down in the show notes. You can submit a tip to Lyon County, Iowa Police Department at lcsonv.com/submit-a-tip and to the Cold Case Coalition tip line at 385-258-3313. You can also join the fight and support Chrissy by following her on social media and on her Reddit page. So all of those links will be down below. So that, everybody, is the perplexing and tragic story of the unsolved cold case of the murder of Wilma June Nissen. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. I also want to say thank you again to Chrissy for being so willing to talk to me. If you guys enjoyed the way that this story was told, I would love if you continue to follow along. Like I said, please share this story. The more that people know about Wilma June Nissen's case, the more likely it is to get solved, and Chrissy can have some type of peace with this. It would also mean the absolute world if you haven't done so yet to leave a 5-star review, whatever podcast platform you're listening on. If you're watching on YouTube, like this video, subscribe to the channel, turn your notifications on, and drop a comment down below with what your thoughts are. If you're listening on Spotify, you can also leave a comment, and I appreciate all of your feedback. And that wraps up today's episode. Thank you again for listening. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week. Please stay safe, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brannon. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to support. Have a topic request or a perplexing story of your own you'd like to share? Send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show further and unlock exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Perplexity merch and additional support links can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.